Welcome to the Hannah Miller Show. And here she is, Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, and this is what happened this week. So for today's episode, I'm going to hit on the Biden family and the FD-1023 document and all of that that's been happening. We haven't really talked about it. So I want to talk about that a little bit today, and then I'm going to hit two short stories, and then I'm going to talk about a pet peeve. Not a pet peeve, it's my soapbox, I guess is a better, and I tried to stop myself, but I couldn't. I had to talk about this. So we're going to, and when we get there, you'll figure out what it is. But first, let's discuss the House Oversight Committee, the Biden crime family taking bribes, and the now infamous FD-1023. At the 11th hour on Wednesday night, FBI Director Christopher Wray relented and said he would allow James Comer and the Oversight Committee access to the now infamous, like I said, FD-1023 document. Prior to that, he was going to be held in contempt of Congress on Thursday because he would not relinquish these documents. So sources indicate that the document will be redacted, but that doesn't matter. Redacted, unredacted, partially redacted, the document will merely substantiate information Comer's committee already has. And so NTD News, they put a summary. They summarized what the committee already knows and what the document will confirm. And this was their summary, and I thought they did a good job, so I'm just going to read it to you. Banking and other records made public Wednesday by House Committee on Oversight and Accountability Chairman James Comer depict a complex money laundering scheme involving millions of dollars, many from foreign countries, given to President Joe Biden and nearly a dozen members of his family. In a memorandum summarizing findings to date of the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability, chaired by Comer, investigators described examining thousands of bank records and legal documents depicting nearly two dozen limited liability corporations established by Biden family members to receive payments from private clients, corporations, and foreign governments, including China and Romania. Biden family members and business associates created a web of over 20 companies. Most were limited liability companies formed during Joe Biden's vice presidency, the memorandum said. Bank records show the Biden family, their business associates, and their companies received over $10 million from foreign national companies. The committee has identified payments to Biden family members from foreign companies while Joe Biden served as vice president and after he left public office, end quote. So some sources are saying that it was about $5 million. Others claim it was a much heftier $30 million. Either way, it doesn't matter. Even just $1 is enough for it to have been treason for him to be paid by these foreign countries for information. Comer said this. In response, he said, after weeks of refusing to even admit the FD-1023 record exists, the FBI has caved and is now allowing all members of the Oversight and Accountability Committee to review this unclassified record that memorializes a confidential human sources conversations with a foreign national who claimed to have bribed then Vice President Joe Biden. However, he then promised more than he and his committee will be able to deliver. And this is what he said. He said, Americans have lost trust in the FBI's ability to enforce the law impartially and demand answers, transparency, and accountability. Allowing all oversight committee members to review this record is an important step toward conducting oversight of the FBI and holding it accountable to the American people. End quote. Here's the problem. And this was pointed out by Bob Adelman in an article that he wrote. What was the title of that? Ray Blinks Comer Cancels Contempt Hearing. But that's Bob Adelman, A-D-E-L-M-A-N-N. And he's right when he says that the problem with Comer saying this and claiming all of this is that the FBI is under the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice. Both Director Wray and Attorney General Merrick Garland are part of the deep state. Both of them. They are going to cover for each other. Even if Comer's committee were to read the infamous FD 1023 and conclude that the FBI failed in its duty to protect the American people, they can do nothing. They'll be powerless to effect any substantial change, as charges brought against Wray will disappear at the DOJ under Garland. Attempting to defund or dismantle the FBI is not going to deter the deep state's ability to use it as a weapon against conservatives, because the House itself would have to pass such legislation. And let me just tell you, only about 12.2% of those in the House are genuine conservatives, genuine constitutionalist Americanists. So any attempt to remove the corruption by rearranging its chairs or cutting some of its funding is highly unlikely. And Bob Adelman wrote about this. I agree. And it's highly unlikely to make any difference. Because, like I said, the FBI is under the jurisdiction of the DOJ. Wray, Garland, they're going to cover for each other. And there's just not enough actual constitutional Americanists in Congress right now to make the changes necessary to actually make something happen. The solution lies, where it most often does, with a well-informed electorate. And I know people don't like to hear that. They don't. They don't like to hear that. But people have to see the corruption and recognize its responsibility to replace traitors with patriots at the ballot box. And this is one of the reasons I haven't really talked about all of this going on. Because we all know that we have a two-tier justice system. And we all know that the FBI and the DOJ are going to cover for one another. And all these guys in Washington, D.C. are going to cover each other's tails. And there's nothing that can be done about it until Congress acts. And Congress is not going to act until we can actually get more constitutional Americanists in Congress. Until the people wake up. And I do think that the people are waking up. But the question is it too late? Because we now have fraudulent elections. And we've got all that to deal with now, too. You know, and it used to be very easy to say, well, or easier to say, that it's up to the voter at the ballot box. But now we don't trust the ballot box because of voter fraud in various places across the country. Now, some places have better, they do much better than others. And most states should be looking to those states as examples, particularly Florida, who, you know, they had a big debacle in 2000 and then they kind of got their act together as a result. So anyway, that's kind of why I for the most part, I've kind of ignored all this, because I know that it's, I knew they're corrupt. I knew they took bribes. Most of us all did. But it is important for us to know, and I think actually have the, you know, we know these things, but the information is now, it's out there. It's been in black and white. And so it is important for us to know it and see it, because hopefully it'll motivate us to do the right thing and to act on these things. And whenever there comes such a time that justice may be served, we know what the truth is. We don't want to be scrambling at that point. We want to be fighting for truth, and we want to know what that truth is. All right, so a couple of kind of funny stories before I get on my soapbox. I couldn't help myself talking about this. Y'all want to hear the death of a presidential campaign in 14 seconds? You want to hear this? Oh, I just love it. Answering the question, what is your view of the situation in Ukraine, and what do you see as the resolution? Presidential candidate, I can't even do this with a straight face. I'm just laughing so hard. Okay, presidential candidate Mike Pence said this.
Now, I want to say President Joe Biden has been slow in providing military resources to Ukraine. I mean, they promised 33 Abrams tanks back in January. They're still waiting on them. We're waiting on F-16s to be transferred from somewhere.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Joe Biden has been slow in providing military resources to Ukraine. And that, kids, is how Republican Mike Pence became a warmongering Democrat. unbelievable. If you've ever wondered what it was like to see a fiery crash landing before a plane even got off the ground, well, that was it, folks. That was it. That is incredibly out of touch with the Republican base. Incredibly out of touch with what the vast majority of Republicans, not to even mention conservatives and constitutional Americanists. I mean, those of us who are over here and we're fighting the fight every day, we're looking at this thing really askance. But even the average semi-informed Republican, rhino, for the most part, unless you're Lindsey Graham, is looking at this thing kind of like, well, wait a minute, maybe we should slow this thing down a bit. Are you kidding me? You know, to be honest, though, like, Mike Pence is so weak, and he's so weak on multiple issues. And I've talked about this before. I mean, I lay a lot of the fault for COVID-19 at his feet because he was the one that was in charge of pulling together that task force. He was the one that Donald Trump trusted to do the right thing. And Donald Trump fumbled the ball in trusting Mike Pence and then allowing it to continue. But Mike Pence had a huge role to play in all of that too, amongst other things. So personally, I think this is a little beautiful, actually. It's beautiful to see. I love to watch it. And I don't even feel bad, not even a little bit, for his two supporters, Russell Moore and David French. Zinger. I like they're only two people. And there's people out there who would say, oh, he doesn't have a chance, but I would totally vote for him. And these are the weak Republicans of yesteryear. They are. Mike Pence just has that. He's such a nice guy. Don't even come at me with that. Don't. Because you can be a staunch defender of the truth and the world will not deem you a nice guy. All right? They're not going to. And so people who cling to nice guy are going to compromise on the truth and they will compromise on justice because truth and justice are no longer politically correct. So don't throw that word at me. Don't come at me with that kind of stuff. All right, I don't want anything to do with it. I want somebody who the world is going to look at and our degenerate culture is going to say, that guy is so mean because he tells them the truth and he defends justice. The culture is not going to like that guy. They're not going to say, that guy is nice. They're not going to like him. All right? But it's not biblically wrong to tell the truth and defend the truth and defend justice. It's not. It's biblical, as a matter of fact. And the world will hate you for it. And so if the world, if our politicians are clinging to somebody because he's just nice, well, I hate to tell you, but that most likely means it's because he's compromised on truth and justice. And I believe that's exactly what Mike Pence has done. And so that's why I don't want to have anything to do with him. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about our other short story, and then I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit.
Here's some of what you might have missed on the Wendy Bell radio program.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen.
Make sure you don't miss a moment by downloading the Wendy Bell Radio Podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Make sure to like, follow, and share.
All right. So this is about Tucker Carlson. I just think this is very interesting. And it's Tucker Carlson released actually two episodes by this recording, but I don't have the data on the second episode. So we're going to talk about the first one. He released his first episode of Tucker Carlson on Twitter on Tuesday. And the primetime ratings for that same night, and remember, primetime is 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are probably listening to me and they're like, what? But, you know, if you're a millennial like me or younger, excuse me, you may not know that because you've never watched a cable news show in your life. So 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, primetime ratings. That same night, CNN, 569,000 viewers, Fox, 1.73 million viewers, MSNBC, 1.86 million viewers. Interestingly enough, MSNBC knocking Fox News out of the prime spot there, the first place spot. Tucker, on the other hand, and I'm talking about this because, one, I find it interesting, but two, I want to add some clarification for folks who may not exactly know how Twitter and, you know, social media and all that works. So Tucker had over 80 million impressions. That does not mean that he had 80 million views and that there was 80 million viewers to his show. That actually compresses down. Impressions are not the same as viewers. This means impressions are that Tucker's show popped up on 80 million different people's, and it ranged. There was, I think that at one point I saw 82 million and then I saw right under it. So I think the last time it was actually at 82 million. So he had 82 million impressions, but that means that it popped up on 82 million people's Twitter feeds and that they saw it. It does not necessarily mean that they watched it and that they watched the full thing. Usually when you see impressions, it's kind of hard to determine what the actual numbers would be, but you can compress it down to somewhere to, you know, being very conservative to like 20%. Let's say 20% of the people who saw the video actually watched it. So you're looking at somewhere between 12 and 16 million actual viewers, which just blows the others out of the water either way. I mean, even if it's just 1% of 82 million, you're still massively trumping CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and these other guys. So ever since Fox News canned Tucker Carlson, which happened on April 21st, its viewership has dropped astronomically. And according to reports from Nelson, Mediate, and Deadline Hollywood, Fox has suffered a 37% decline in viewership during primetime, which again, that 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock. This is what I find interesting about it, though. Among the key demographic during primetime, that's the age 25 to 54, because that's who they're really aiming for during primetime to attract, ages 25 to 54. The one that advertisers, like I said, they focus on the most when spending their advertising dollars, their viewership has dropped an astonishing 62%. 62%. Now, I think I heard that Newsmax has picked up a lot of that viewership. But I really think that what we're seeing is a massive shift in media consumption, moving away from cable television and just moving to other venues. And how it kind of all falls out with Twitter is going to be very interesting. I know Fox News is already saying that they're going to sue Tucker for a breach of contract. So, you know, that's all going to have to be worked out as well. But I find all of this to be very interesting just because media consumption, how people consume their information, the news, cable network, all of that is fascinating to me. And of course, you know, this whole thing between Fox News and Tucker and Twitter, that's all very interesting as well. And seeing this massive shift in that age demographic away from Fox News is, you know, I think it's very telling. And it'll be very interesting to see where a lot of these folks end up landing permanently. So anyway, that's just all because I find it very interesting. Like I said, Tucker Carlson's, he's dropped another episode as well. I think it was Thursday, but the numbers aren't in from that yet. I haven't seen them yet, so couldn't talk about them as of the recording of this show. So, all right. this is a little bit of my soapbox, and I told myself I wasn't going to talk about this on my podcast, but I've been riled up about it, just so riled up about it all day, and I could not stop my fingers from typing, and so I'm going to address it. If you've been on the internet the last few days, you may be asking yourself this question: who is Matt Rife? Matt Rife is a comedian that he's gone viral on TikTok and Instagram and has now announced an upcoming world tour. And a lot of us are not on Instagram. A lot of us are not on TikTok especially. And so when it all of a sudden started blowing up on Facebook, then folks were, you know, wait, who is this? What is this? Why is everybody talking about this guy? You know, let me read to you some of the comments that women, many Christian women that I know, have made about his upcoming tour. So sexy. Oh, daddy, is that you? Lord, yes! With the panting emoji. And then others with the face hot and panting emoji, sweating. All of this kind of thing. If you haven't picked up on it by those comments, the guy's a looker. He uses that to his advantage. His primary marketing campaign for this world tour is he's shirtless. He has no shirt on. He's flexing, you know, that kind of thing, holding a mic. He's got a smolder to go with the looks. So these women, and like I said, many, many Christian women on kind of the outskirts of and within my on my social media have been falling all over themselves talking about this guy. Just, I mean, you know, emojis with the love heart eyes, the fire, you know, just all of this language, emojis and GIFs to communicate the attractive sexual nature of this guy. So not only are these women literally committing adultery via lust, and I mean, come on, this Matthew 5 tells us that looking at a woman lustfully or looking at a man lustfully is the same as committing adultery. So let's not play any games. Let's not do that. And on top of that, just try to watch any 1 minute clip of his comedy. Pick any of them. You could go online and pick any 1 minute clip. I have seen these have been popping up on my newsfeed because he's been going viral for months now. I have seen plenty of them. I picked one at random for the purpose of this show. And in 1 minute, I counted, he used Jesus Christ twice. He said the F word 5 times. He said the D word twice. And he said the S word twice. And not only all of that vulgar language, profane language, better way to put it, the entire joke, the entire clip with encompassing all of that language was about how big his male genitalia is. As he went back and forth with some woman in the crowd about her significant other's male genitalia, which he used, you know, a crass word to reference. Look, I'm not a prude, and I love humor. I love comedy. Anybody who knows me in real life will tell you that. But Matt Rife is so vulgar and so foul that I cannot believe the Christian women who are falling all over themselves to spend $120 or more for tickets to his upcoming tour. And here's the kicker. And publicly announcing it. I wouldn't be telling anybody. I would be so ashamed. I would be so ashamed if anybody, in particular, you know, mom, I mean, if my mama found out that this is how I was acting, and this was the kind of comedy that I was going to go pay good money for. I mean, woo-wee, I'd be in for a talking to. And not to mention, what would my husband think? What would my husband do? God bless him. I mean, at least try to hide your immorality. And I said it. That's immoral. Consuming such vulgar entertainment while simultaneously lusting over the one providing it to you is immoral. How? Just tell me this. How have we failed so badly as a church that Christian women feel absolutely no shame whatsoever in announcing not only their willingness to consume vulgar, profane entertainment, but also to publicly lust over a man that is not their husband. That's what they're doing. That's what all of these nice Christian women are doing. I mean, I don't play the what if game or the comparison game most of the time because it's pretty much fruitless. But really, what if this was a bunch of Christian men announcing for all to see on the internet that they can't wait to go to a show featuring a raunchy woman that they think is a total sex pot? How would you feel about that? And her entire ad campaign, her marketing campaign, I'm sorry, for the tour that she's going on, she's got everything hanging out. The church and the women would be beside themselves. But for some reason, because it's women, we get a pass on the same kind of behavior. We can do the exact same thing. And my sister Miriam said, she's like, it's like 50 Shades of Grey all over again. That's exactly right. Our pastors will not touch the topic of women and immorality with a 20-foot pole. Did anyone hear a majority of pastors address the 50 Shades of Grey movie? What about husbands? I mean, did you hear a lot of men addressing it? On that note, what about women's proclivity to consume erotic literature? Oh, now I know I'm stepping on some toes. Which women also frequently announce on social media. Usually it's, hey, I love this author and this author. What do you have for some great summer read suggestions that are along the same lines? And I'm always appalled by the authors that these women are reading. What about, when was the last time that you heard a pastor address women, Christian women posting provocative photos of themselves on the internet? It's rolling into summertime. You know what that means? They're going to be wearing next to nothing and they're going to post it all over the internet. Or what about this one? Pastors unwilling to call abortion murder because, as one pastor told my husband, I believe abortion is murder, but I can't call it that because there are women in my congregation who have had secret abortions. That pastor just said the quiet part out loud. Men, pastors, are terrified of offending the women in their pews. And I believe that this comes down, I thought about it, and I believe that this comes down to one of four things, or a combination of them. One, pastors do not feel that it is within their purview. They feel inadequate as men to confront women on this topic, which you and I know is balderdash because women are a part of their flock and their responsibility is to guide the flock. So that's just a trash argument. Two, it's often, I think, the equal and opposite reaction to aspects of quote-unquote purity culture, which, you know, it often fell into an overly harsh and demeaning view of women. I was raised in the time period of purity culture. This was not my experience. I was not raised in a aspect of purity culture that was overly harsh or demeaning. I think a lot of that had to do with my parents, the culture of Christianity, the group of Christians that I was in and surrounded by. But I do know that there were aspects, this did happen, this overly harsh kind of demeaning view of women within purity culture, that did happen in certain sects of Christianity, and they have typically been the loudest about this. There's been a lot of pushback by those women, rightly so, although I think that they tend to encompass all of the things about quote-unquote purity culture, and they kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, in my opinion. But that's kind of a conversation for another day. As I've said before, though, what's happening here, this equal and opposite reaction, the reason that men and pastors, the church, is not willing to address this, it's what I call ditch diving. It's going from one extreme to the other. And in reaction to, you know, this harsh, demeaning aspect of purity culture, they ditch dive and they react and they go into the other ditch. And that's basically anything goes. Women can wear whatever they want. They can say whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. There's no accountability. As I had one Christian friend who used to be very conservative, and then became very progressive. You know, she, her belief is I should be able to walk naked down the street, and that's my right as a woman, as a Christian, and it not elicit anything in a man. You know, that, yeah, what, I mean, it's just bizarro arguments. But anyway, I believe, just in very brief, addressing this whole ditch diving thing, I think our responsibility as Christians is most often, not all the time, but most often, to find the grace-filled balance between two extreme positions. And we struggle. That's hard. It's hard to do that. It's difficult to find where's the balance, where's the good in both having boundaries and freedom. Because freedom without boundaries is, well, often it leads to immorality. But boundaries without freedom often leads to legalism. And so we have to be discerning, grace-filled believers who find the balance between good boundaries and healthy freedom. And that's not easy. All right, number three. Men, just plain and simple, men have no idea. They have no idea what kind of entertainment their wives are consuming. They are clueless about what their wives are reading or watching. This is why a lot of women also, not in regards to erotic literature or television, but they also get caught up with false preachers, false teachers, is because their husbands have no idea who they're listening to. You know, they just see, oh, it's a Christian, it's some, you know, woman who's a Christian, she's written a book on reading the Bible or whatever. And they go no further than that. They don't know nothing else. And unbeknownst to them, that woman that their wife is reading is a heretic. they don't know. They don't pursue it any further. Pastors don't either, a lot of times. They have no idea what kind of Christian, and I'm putting air quotes around that, Christian literature the women in their pews are consuming. And a lot of times they have it in their church libraries, having no idea the kind of heresies that are being promoted within their very own church library. They leave all that to somebody else. And the men of the church, the husbands, the dads, they're doing the same thing. So they just have no idea. They're ignorant. A lot of times, willfully so. It's too much hard work to know. And I'm not saying we got to control what women are reading or consuming. I'm not saying that at all. But I think we should know. I want to know what men, what are the kind of books that we're letting men read? Is there anything in there that I would say, wait a minute, this has a demeaning view of women. This isn't right. I think that's where accountability comes in. I think that's where we help each other as a body of believers. That's what we're supposed to do, is help each other. Not war against one another, as if we're trying to control one another. That's not it at all. We just say, wait a minute, I don't think this is the correct view of sexuality or whatever. And number four, men pastors are so guilt-ridden by their own immorality and pornography usage that they do not feel spiritually free to pluck the splinter out of the eye of their wives. It's a hard one, isn't it? I mean, none of these are particularly easy. But these are kind of the four things that I think most prevent men and pastors from addressing what's going on, this kind of immorality amongst the women in their lives, the women in their church. And I get it. It's hard. It's hard as a man to sit down and confront a woman. But, you know, that's why it is good to have women in your church who you know that you can go to and say, hey, this is going on. Can you come with me to address this in Kathy's life? I think it's a great thing for church to have female biblical counselors or a couple that you can take with you that can confront the wife or a woman. But of course, primarily really comes down to men and pastors and even women, other women in the church who feel like they can't confront another woman in their church for her immorality because they themselves have sin that shackles them. Because I'm not just going to throw the men under the bus on that one. There's lots of other women who, while they don't want to confront so-and-so about reading, you know, Danielle Steele or whatever, because, well, they like to read that too. They want to go see Matt Rife too. So they can't say nothing as a woman. So I challenge all of us to make ourselves right before the Lord, to repent of the immoralities, the sin that we're clinging to, so that it doesn't hold us back. Not that we have to be perfect, but I do think that this particular issue is very hard to confront others on when it's the same sin that you have in your life and you're not battling it. You're not fighting it. Because there's a big difference between somebody saying, you know what, I struggle with this same temptation, but I'm fighting it, and this is how the Holy Spirit is helping me. This is how God's word is helping me. Let me come alongside you. There's a big difference between that person and somebody who refuses to even acknowledge. They're hiding that sin still, or they're refusing to deal with it. So in conclusion, I'll just say this. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Philippians 4:8. This verse does not encompass Matt Rife and his comedy.
Thank you for listening to The Hannah Miller Show. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast. This podcast is produced by Bob Sloan Audio Productions. If you'd like to find out more about Hannah or to schedule her for a speaking event, go to her website, thehannahmillershow.com.